Malloy with the ball to start the second quarter. Now Southeast goes to a 2-3 zone look. Tejins, who had a block just a moment ago to close out the first quarter, she'll shoot the triple and nails it. Tatum Tejins with her first career three-pointer, and Beloit's within one, 15-14.
And that would be the closest Beloit would get last night from that point forward. Tatum Tejins with her first career three-pointer. Beloit off to a pretty good start last night against Southeast Saline. Beloit down at that point, 15-14. Trailed by 12 at halftime, 34-22, and then just couldn't buy a bucket in the second half. Just 8 points, three in the third quarter, five in the fourth. Beloit only 8 points total in the final two quarters of play, and they fall to Southeast Saline last night by a final of 60-30. Beloit girls now 0-3 overall, 0-2 in league play, and Southeast Saline improves to 4-4, 3-0 in the league. They're led by a very talented freshman, Maddie Harris, who had 19 points. Lexi Jacobson, a freshman for Southeast, had 10. Beloit was led by Portia Cooper with 9, as Beloit falls last night to Southeast of Saline. They handled the full court pressure very well initially, and then Southeast went to that 1-3-1 half court trap. That caused problems, and then the second half they kind of smelled blood in the water, went back to their full court pressure, and that bothered Beloit at times. And then Beloit had some good looks, just weren't able to knock them down. That's been a problem for Beloit this year, as they've only scored 31, 28, and 30 points in their three games. So in order to win, that's hard to hold other teams under 30. So yeah, the offense has to improve, and part of that is handling the ball, not having turnovers. And Beloit, those two areas they'll need to continue to work on. The inexperience, cutting down the turnovers, which then will turn into more shots on goal and then hopefully more points as well. So Beloit girls fall last night 60-30 against Southeast, and there was some basketball besides Beloit last night as well.
Yeah, one boys game. Clifton Clyde and Sylvan Lucas were playing in a game that was added to the Sylvan Lucas schedule there, where Clifton Clyde ended up with a 51-41 win over the Mustangs. So that's what we had last night as far as basketball was concerned in the area. And you can always check out ncksports.com for the latest results. There was also some wrestling last night for the Lincoln Leopards as they were at the Hoisington Round Robin. And with Trey Barrientes continues to wrestle very well here this season for Lincoln, as he finished in first place, went 4-0. He won all of his matches by fall, and three of them in less than a minute. The championship only took him a minute and 42 seconds, and he's now 16-0 on the season there after that championship at Hoisington. Marshall Hurlbut finished in third place for Lincoln there, and the full results are posted at ncksports.com for wrestling yesterday for Lincoln at the Hoisington Round Robin.
Any wrestling this weekend?
This weekend, yeah, we'll have Smith Center's actually at Superior, Nebraska today with that tournament, and then coming up tomorrow, Smith Center and Osborne will both be at Oberlin, and Beloit will be at the Marysville Invitational coming up on Saturday there in the wrestling side of things. And well, this is going to be two more weekends of wrestling, and they're going to be into the postseason. So a very short second semester as far as regular season competition.
Yeah, no doubt. Not a lot of time to prepare for postseason action for our wrestlers across the state of Kansas. Speaking of Keisha, I know you didn't say Keisha, but they're the ones that put together the whole postseason wrestling thing. It truly seems to be unfair to the wrestling programs across the state, but it is what it is. They're going to meet, special meeting next Wednesday, January 20th, and sounds like the biggest thing they're going to discuss is expanding the amount of fans to attend high school activities to 4 fans instead of 2. So they double from 2 to 4. So they'll discuss that. Right now, the 2 parents / guardians per participant's family is in effect through January 28th, which would be, interestingly enough, they didn't think that ahead, did they? Because January 29th is a Friday, which would mainly be games.
Yeah.
They went to 28th, which why not just make it the end of January, the 31st, would have made sense.
Seems like that's
whatever,
what I would have done.
31st
but
is Sunday.
Maybe they just felt like maybe the last game in January, they needed more fans there.
I guess. It's kind of weird now. I look at the calendar now. But they will discuss that, and if you're someone that wants to go to the games, for instance, you know, my wife and I can go to the games, but the siblings can't. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, our two sons or younger ones would like to watch the oldest play, they can't go right now, but if they expand it to 4, then they could. So I know a lot of people are hoping that Keisha will allow that. Nebraska's allowing 8, I think, per participant's family. So they, and I saw pretty like 50% capacity at least in a Nebraska game here recently. So every state's handling things a little bit differently, and Kansas will address that coming up on Wednesday. All right, so why don't you go through the scheduled games tonight, and then we'll focus in on the games we have on the radio.
Yeah, we'll start first with those other games. Like you said there, other games are going on tonight. Lakeside's still planning on going to Chase tonight. They're going to have limited rosters when they go down there. But as of now, the plan is still to go to Chase for Lakeside and then Pike Valley at Rock Hills. Sylvan Lucas at Wakefield. There's a girls-only game tonight. Concordia at Chapman and Ellsworth at Sacred Heart. It's kind of a limited schedule tonight because league tournament for the NPL was actually supposed to start with play-in games today. So there's not a lot of teams that had new games that were scheduled for tonight because of that cancellation. So sort of a short schedule tonight. One game that was made up was from what was supposed to be played really right after the break, and that's Thunder Ridge at Osborne, and that's on Katy Country 94 tonight, and then on Z96 Point Through the Lake, KatyCountry94.com, Minneapolis at Beloit in NCAA league play. JV and C team girls will get things rolling at 4:30 on the video stream, and then at 5:30 the JV girls, or JV boys, excuse me, C team boys at 5:30, JV girls at 7:30. I got one line off on what I was reading here. And so that's coming up tonight. And then obviously the varsity that we'll talk about here with pregame coverage beginning at 5:50 on Z96.3 and online video at ncksports.com.
By the way, a note, Ellsworth Sacred Heart boys game has been postponed for tonight. I tagged you on that yesterday, and you have it updated on NCKS as well, so you know about it.
I saw the bottom of that, and then, I just looked at the girls' schedule probably and just wrote it down.
It's
the boys' game.
Boys postponed. Ellsworth doesn't have enough players due to COVID-19, so just girls only between Ellsworth and Sacred Heart. All right, we'll stay in the NCAA to start, where it is Beloit hosting Minneapolis tonight. All the games so far in 2021 for Beloit, girls and boys, have been home games. They'll have another one, the boys will, against Osborne on Tuesday, JV at 5, and then the Orange and Black Classic game that'll take place in Beloit between the Beloit-Osborne boys next Tuesday. Orange and Black Classic and Colby will have full coverage of Osborne and Beloit throughout the week next week on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3. The Lake, and the Beloit girls, after playing just one game over, 6 weeks, they're now going to play two games in 24 hours. Whoa! I mean, that's crazy talk. Here is Shauna Remus, knowing that Minneapolis will pressure, and they have some experience.
They do have some seniors that have been around in the program for a while, and they just get after it defensively as well, and put a lot of pressure on the ball, and so we're going to have to definitely control our turnovers against them as well. But we just need to find ways to score, and right now that's kind of difficult for us because we're not taking care of the ball the way we should. And hopefully just the more experience we get, the better the kids relax and just show their true abilities.
Yeah, and that's one thing. You get a bit of a rhythm. I mean, the Beloit hasn't been able to get a rhythm, that's for sure, on the girls' side and really not on the boys' side either. The boys hosting Minneapolis tonight. Minneapolis, very good basketball team. They're 6-1. They only lost to Southeast, who maybe is the favorite to win the league this year, although they already lost to Sacred Heart, and then Minneapolis beat Southeast. So those are the three best teams in the league, it appears, although Ellsworth, once they get everybody back and healthy, they could be a factor as well. It's a pretty tough league this year on the boys' side, and Ryan Iyer, the head coach of the Trojans, his team facing the 6-1 Lions. They're a very experienced team, and they're very balanced, and Coach Iyer knows his team must be physical tonight to compete.
Minneapolis has got a good squad. They've got inside, they're strong and athletic, and they've got perimeter guys that can knock down shots, and they always defend, and they like to get up and pressure you. And so for us, it's coming out, it's going to be about taking care of the ball, getting good shots, maybe not the first shot, but getting good shots. And then defensively, we're going to have to play physical, and we're going to have to battle for every loose ball and be aware of where guys are. And, they're a good team that we're going to have to come out and play hard if we want to compete.
Yeah, they got the Spencer Davidson kid. He's tough inside, very physical. That's a concern for Beloit. They have not been very good at rebounding the ball, and that was a concern coming in to the season. Their tallest players are freshmen. So it will be a challenge, no doubt, for Beloit tonight against Minneapolis, but that's why you play the game. Beloit is hosting Minneapolis. They got their first win early in the week. That maybe gives them some confidence going into tonight. So once again, the varsity games, Beloit, Minneapolis, at Beloit High School. You can hear them on the radio on Z96.3 Lake, and then those, along with all the JV games and the C-team games, will be streamed at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. That full schedule is posted at ncksports.com. Dusty will have a rematch already. Lakeside's played one game, and Osborne and Thunder Ridge have the audacity to play twice before Lakeside plays twice? What? It's the year, man. It's just the year that we have. Jamie Walters, let's start with the girls' game, where Trina Luters knows that her team needs to play their style of basketball against Thunder Ridge this evening on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com.
I think we're going to have to come out focused and keep in mind how to play our ball game and keep the tone of the game the way we want and keep some composure. And it's going to be a good matchup, but I know that we're going to be ready for them. And just like Thunder Ridge, I'm sure, is ready to play us. And it'll be another good game that we come into on Friday.
Thunder Ridge girls head coach Darren Grauerholtz on the adjustments this time around.
I just want to clean things up offensively. After looking back at that game, I didn't realize the turnovers that we had. And then the other thing is we were out of position too many times defensively, and I think that that created some problems for us as well. I just didn't feel like defensively we were really attacking things like we should have. And, you know, we were just 1 to 2 steps behind. So we just need to focus on that and make sure we cover things up like we're supposed to.
All right, Thunder Ridge. Osmond girls game tonight, probably around 6:15, somewhere in that range. That's how it usually works on the MPL. They start the varsity games a little bit later than the NCAA. Your thoughts on the rematch between the Bulldogs and the Longhorns on the girls' side?
Yeah, it's really going to be interesting just to see how Osmond responds from the tough loss there on Tuesday to St. John's Tipton. You always say, don't let that turn into 2 losses, right? And so they've got another tough matchup tonight, and I think that's going to help them actually keep their focus and get refocused since they are playing Thunder Ridge. Last time when they beat them 47-40, they ended a 21-game winning streak for Thunder Ridge in this series. So I think that that's still probably in the back of their minds. They haven't had a lot of success against Thunder Ridge, and they want to come out focused tonight. But, you know, Thunder Ridge is definitely better and improved from that first time that they played. And they've got a lot of girls that were maybe not quite as experienced at the start of the season that are starting to gain some more of that experience. So could see, I'm expecting a similar game here tonight, very close game, and whoever makes the big plays down the stretch and can play good defense down the stretch is the one that's going to pull out that win here tonight in Osborne. So looking forward to that one for sure.
All right, the boys game, a rematch that Osborne won very easily. What was it, 59-20?
Yeah.
Was the final of that one. But new head coach at Thunder Ridge, and of course you get into rhythm, maybe get some practices, start to play games. These teams should really improve from the beginning of the year to the middle to the end of the year. Jamie Walters, his basketball team, they got to be aggressive on defense.
You know, we just got to keep being aggressive, and it all starts with our defense. We've got to continue to work hard and outwork our opponents and keep sharing the ball on offense, look inside out first, and you know, if we can continue to do those things, we'll continue to improve.
And on the other side, it is Devon Branch, the first-year head coach for Thunder Ridge. His team just simply learning as they go with each game.
I'm hoping we have a chip on our shoulder. I hope the guys come ready to go. We're learning how to play our defensive principles a lot better now. We're learning how to play for each other and not just for ourselves. We're learning how to get the ball swinging. We're learning our plays. I think this one should be a better one than the first time we see them, because we're getting our adjustments well.
Yeah, they played early in the year, and certainly there's benefits of having stability at the coaching situation.
Yeah.
And so it takes a little bit of time. So thoughts on the rematch on the boys' side? Obviously, Osborne will be a heavy favorite.
Yeah, and Osborne's starting to, I think, after Tuesday night against St. John's Tipton, really started to find some things out about themselves as well. And, if Doak Guttery continues to play like he is as a freshman in the post, that they're going to need that, because like we said on the broadcast there on Tuesday night, they don't really have the post presence that they've had in the past sometimes. So Doak's really stepping up as a freshman to be that guy, and Osborne, if he can do that, is just a different team. And so, yeah, they're definitely a favorite tonight. But I like some of the things that Thunder Ridge can do. They did not shoot the ball particularly well the last time I saw them there in that game against Osborne. And so if they can, shore some of those things up, I think they're still going to be a good team eventually. It's going to take a little time, like you said, with stability at the head coaching position. But I think Devon's got them going the right way, and they should be improved. I'm not expecting a 59-20 game tonight, but you just never know until you get out there.
Thunder Ridge at Osborne tonight, girls and boys doubleheader on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. A complete look at our broadcast schedule and the video stream schedule and more posted at ncksports.com. We turn our attention now to the National Football League, where there's this game called the NFL Divisional Playoff in the AFC between the Chiefs and the Browns. 1 o'clock pregame on Sunday afternoon, kickoff at 2:05 on your home for the Chiefs, the Super Bowl champions, Z96.3 The Lake. Travis Kelce, who has just had a phenomenal year. Kelce on facing his hometown team, because he is from Ohio.
being from Cleveland and playing the Browns, it's definitely kind of upped the ante a little bit. You know, it made it a little bit more personal. I absolutely love Cleveland, but I understand that we are each other's enemies right now. So I got a lot of friends and a lot of family back in Cleveland telling me I'm the enemy, and it's definitely going to be fun going up against the Browns, and it's going to be an exciting game.
One of the subplots of this game, Kareem Hunt returning to Kansas City for the first time since he, in essence, was kicked off the team. Hunt has had a pretty good season for the Browns, and Andy Reid has nothing but respect for Kareem Hunt.
He's a heck of a player, absolutely. Both those two, I mean, that's a dynamic duo right there. Those guys, man, they are good football players, and listen, we love Kareem. I mean, he was here, and he's a heck of a kid, and, you know, he just, you know, I'm so happy for him that he's doing well, and really, when it's all said and done, that's the most important thing. You put the game aside and want to make sure these guys end up heading the right direction for them so they can sustain that the rest of their life, you know, and I'm happy for them.
We'll go through the full injury report here in a little bit, but Mitchell Schwartz will not be able to play, and I don't know if he's going to play at all in the playoffs, and Andy Reid was asked about their Pro Bowl right tackle, or well, not Pro Bowl right tackle, but he should have been. He's outstanding, Mitchell Schwartz.
Backs are fickle, man, and so he's not going to be back this week, and then we're literally taking that day by day. I mean, it's these things are crazy. There's nobody that wants to play more than this guy. So, I mean, I know, you know how he's wired. I mean, you don't play all the games he played in a row and not enjoy the game. So, but he physically can't do that right now, and we'll just see how it goes down the road. I don't think anybody's lost hope in that. We're just, you know, sometimes time is an important thing here.
Backs are fickle, and I've thrown my back out multiple times. I don't know how in the world you can play with a really bad back in the National Football League, especially at right tackle or anywhere on the offensive line, because you need leverage. You get pushed back. You're on the heels a lot. I think you could probably maybe go a little bit, might be a little easier to play on the defensive line and rush off the edge with a bad back than it is to block with a bad back. So Schwartz, I don't think, is going to play the rest of the year. I think he'll be ready to go next year, hopefully. And that's a bummer, but the Chiefs have been without him for quite some time. Okay, the quarterback matchup is intriguing and interesting. Patrick Mahomes versus Baker Mayfield. When Baker came in the league and he had a few good games, and the Browns won a few games, won that one game to break their losing streak after having a really bad year and all this, you know, before he was drafted, I put on Twitter, and I had some folks from Cleveland actually come on, like, saw my tweet somehow and responded to it and were in agreement with me. And I said, because it was the week before Baker and Mahomes were going to play in Cleveland, and I said, this is going to be the first of many possibly epic matchups between maybe going to be the two best quarterbacks in the AFC. Now, Baker went backwards last year, we know, and Mahomes has gone nowhere but up. But now Baker seems to have figured something out, and here we are. I was talking about epic matchups. This is a big one. The divisional playoff round in the AFC playoffs. Here's Mahomes on facing Baker. And Baker and Mahomes, there's a lot of points when they played in college against one another. And the last time they played in 2018, there's quite a few points, although the Chiefs did win somewhat comfortably. Here's Mahomes on facing Baker Mayfield on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's cool to get to play against him in such a big game in the playoffs and everything like that. Knowing him for a long time since I was a senior in high school, and to be able to play on this stage it's going to be special. And I mean, he went to Oklahoma, went to Texas Tech, so he got the better of me in college, so I'll try to do my best to win in the NFL.
The defense for Cleveland, they have a name brand in Myles Garrett, but they did not play well against Pittsburgh, but they did get five turnovers. Was that Cleveland forcing the turnovers? Was that Pittsburgh imploding? I'd say it's a combination of the two. They still gave up over 500 yards passing and 37 points, but they did win. Here's Mahomes on Myles Garrett and that Brown defense.
I've known Myles for a long time, being in high school, and trust me, he was the exact same size in high school as he is now, so I'm glad I didn't play him then. But he's a tremendous player, plays extremely hard, has a ton of talent, and that they have talent across that whole entire defense. And so for us, it's about executing at a high level, getting the ball out of my hands, kind of like I said, letting guys make plays, and we're going to have to play our best football if we want to win a football game at the end of the day.
All right, what about the playoff prep? How did you get ready for this one, Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just take your intensity up a level. I mean, it's still the same preparation, just maybe try to dive deeper into the film study, dive deeper into the breakdowns and the different ways you can go out there and have success against a defense. But, I mean, just taking it to another level would be the biggest thing.
Chiefs starters are, in essence, coming off a double bye. Not a bye, a double bye. And last year, the Chiefs had a bye. They were number two seed and came out flat. Or really rusty, maybe not flat. All kinds of things went against them. They were down 24-0 to Houston. Next thing you know, they rattle off 28 points and led at halftime. So the Chiefs are well aware that they got to a slow start. And if they get off to a slow start on Sunday, can they come back? Sure. But I don't know if they can go down 24-0 to the Browns, because they're able to run the ball better than the Texans were a year ago. Having said that, though, the Browns were up 28-0. And the Steelers came back, and if Mike Tomlin actually had some guts and went for it on a 4th-and-2, when he had all the momentum in the world, I think the Steelers go down and score, and it had been 35-30. And who knows how that game turns out. Here's Mahomes on staying sharp during the bye weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I stayed on top of everything. I practiced as much as I could practice, getting reps in, making sure I get back to the fundamentals of the footwork and stuff like that, and then continue to work out and prepare myself. We didn't start the way we wanted to last year when we came off the bye, and so I want to make sure that we do a better job of starting a little bit faster and try not to put ourselves in that deficit.
All right, before we break down this game, and we'll also hear Dani Wilniak at KCTV5, who was with us earlier this week previewing the game, and get her prediction on it. Here's the injury report for the Chiefs. Rashad Fenton, corner, limited practice yesterday, a foot ankle injury. Willie Gay had the ankle injury on the final regular season game, has not practiced this week, so it doesn't look good that he's going to play. Sammy Watkins, I'm trying to figure him out. Sammy's just an odd cat. That's just the best way to explain it. And, you know, the Chiefs have, you know, dealt with injuries. Sammy Watkins has been injury prone most of his career, but he's really stepped up in the playoffs. And he had a great postseason last year. And I think everybody was sitting here, a lot of Chiefs fans in Chiefs Kingdom. All right, Sammy's hurt again. What a shocker, you know, during the regular season. But as long as he's healthy for the playoffs, that's where he's going to make his money. He hasn't practiced this week with a calf injury. And yeah, They've had 2 weeks off. So that calf injury continues to be a problem. And that we've talked about the importance of Sammy Watkins in this offense. It's not all about statistics as how many catches or yards he gets, but it is important for this Chiefs offense. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he had limited practice Wednesday with that ankle hip injury, of course, that he suffered late in the season. Did not practice yesterday, so that's not a good sign. Deion Yelder, tight end, a groin injury, did not practice yesterday. And then Mike Rimmers did. Ben Neiman did with a hamstring, full participant. Le'Veon Bell's good to go, it looks like. So there's a little bit of good news there with Rimmers on the offensive line, and Le'Veon Bell's good to go, and Ben Neiman's okay, and Derek Nnadi's okay. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, doesn't look like I can count on him to play on Sunday. Willie Gay, it doesn't look very promising. Sammy Watkins, it doesn't look super promising either. And obviously, I think the Chiefs will be okay without Willie Gay per se. Offensively, you like to have at least one, Watkins or Helaire. And I'd rather have Watkins, honestly, because I think the Chiefs can do enough running the ball to keep Cleveland honest with Bell or even Darrell Williams, and then don't rush Helaire back and aggravate something, because he's the future for you at running back. The Chiefs aren't the only ones dealing with injuries, though, and this is the great thing about having a double bye. The Chiefs still have some serious injuries to worry about, but the Browns are banged up because, of course, they had to play all the way to the end of the year to get into the playoffs, and then, of course, last week against the Steelers, and they're beat up on that offensive line. They have one of the best offensive lines in football. It's a big reason why Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are so good, is that they have some holes to run through, and then they take advantage of it. Jack Conklin, very talented Pro Bowl tackle, hamstring, knee. He had a hamstring injury and left the Steeler game last week. He has not practiced this week. That's good news for the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Miles Garrett, a limited participant of shoulder, but he'll be ready to go. Trust me on that. David Nyuko, tight end, not really a pass-catching tight end very much for the Browns, but he's improved his blocking skills. He has not practiced this week due to a hamstring. Sheldon Richardson, big defensive tackle, limited participant due to a neck injury. Wyatt Teller, a very good guard for the Browns, he's had an ankle, limited participant. J.C. Treader, their starting center, a knee, limited participant. So three of their five starting offensive linemen are banged up. So that's something to keep an eye on going in the game on Sunday. All right, keys to this game. We'll start with Dusty. The Chiefs and the Browns, I like the matchup. And I told my son yesterday, I'm so confident about this matchup, that scares me. I feel so good about this matchup that it scares me. That makes totally no sense. But
Oh, it makes sense to me because I feel the same way.
Yeah, it's like for some reason I feel like the Chiefs fans are, you know, kind of like, well, you know, I mean, we're worried about the running game, but now as we get closer, yeah, the Chiefs are going to roll. I hear see all the predictions, of course, on the Chiefs side. The Chiefs are going to roll, and they very well could, and I think it is a really good matchup for the Chiefs, but I do get a little bit more worried when we get closer to game time. Not necessarily about the Browns and how they play, because I know how they play. Just, you know, there's a weird bounce, a weird injury. Yeah. You know, Mahomes turns an ankle or Kelsey gets concussed or, you know, something happens to, you know, Chris Jones. Who knows? Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, injuries can change things in a heartbeat. You know, you have a, you know, Mecole Hardman has a brain cramp and tries to return a kick, and that turns all the momentum, and Cleveland recovers a muff kick. I think on paper the Chiefs are clearly the better team, in my opinion. But what are you looking at? What's going to make the difference in this game, and how do you think it's going to play out?
Well, I mean, I think number one is just making sure Mahomes has protection, and if he does that, it's a game where the Chiefs should be able to do some good things, right? I mean, score exactly, and also, if Mahomes has protection, and then you can get like a game like they played against Buffalo earlier this year, where you actually get the run game going, maybe just a little bit. It doesn't have to be exactly like Buffalo, but be able to run the ball just a little bit throughout the course of the game,
right?
It can really help, I think, in a game like this as well, where you really have to have where Cleveland has to be just on their toes all day long,
right?
And against the Chiefs' offense, and I think they can do that if they. You know, obviously, we talk about Myles Garrett. He's going to be tough to defend and always is. But overall, I feel like it's a defense that they can be able to do some good things against. And I feel like that could be the case if they can come in with the focus that they usually have and give him the protection that he needs. I think it comes down, I think, to the offense, because I think the Chiefs defense will be able to, you know, at least slow the Browns down a little bit.
I really look at this kind of on the other side. I think we can give all the reasons why the Chiefs will win. What we really need to do is focus on what do the Browns need to do to win. And to me, number one, they have to get pressure on Mahomes without blitzing. Without blitzing. Yeah. Patrick Mahomes against the blitz this year, 16 touchdowns, one interception, has been sacked only 4 times against the blitz. He kills the blitz. I mean, so you talk about blitzing, it's feast and famine. It's famine when you go against the Chiefs, and when you got Tyreek Hill darting down the field and Kelsey underneath. So the Browns have to get pressure on Mahomes without blitzing. If they can do that, I think it's game on. The second part of that is the Browns have to be able to run the football.
Yeah.
And I think they'll be able to do that if they want to. And then the third thing is the Browns have to stay out of third and long situations and to where they can do play action, bootleg with Mayfield, where he can run pass option and get the ball out of his hands fast. He got the ball out of his hands very fast against the Steelers. And he will do that, I'm sure, again on Sunday. And when he gets the ball out of his hands really fast, obviously that means that negates Frank Clark, that negates Chris Jones and the pass rush for the Chiefs. So you can sit here and go, oh, my goodness, on Sunday during the game, everybody's going to start tweeting if Baker's getting the ball out quickly, you know, quick short drops and quick short passes. What's wrong with the Chiefs pass rush? Listen, no pass rush is going to get the quarterback if you unload it within basically 1.5 seconds. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be a focus for the Browns, and I think that's a bit of a concern for the Chiefs. So to me, the Browns, in order to win, they have to be able to rush the quarterback without blitzing and get pressure without blitzing, and they're going to have to be able to run the ball and then stay out of third and longs to where Baker isn't just going to have to step back and throw, which, you know, he can step back and throw and he can make plays. We know that. But they don't have a guy really to beat you vertically down the field. Jarvis Landry is more of a possession receiver now at this stage of his career. They do have some talented tight ends, which could be a bit of a problem for the Chiefs. And I think Daniel Sorensen is going to have to take away one of those. The Hooper kid is a pretty good tight end. So, you know, and I think the other concern for me would be rust. You know, if the Chiefs come out flat, you know, and they're down 14-0, then the pressure, of course, shifts to the Chiefs. Of course, they've been there, done that. I saw on NFL Network the other day that, well, one guy said, listen, the Chiefs could be down 35-0, and I'm not ruling out the Chiefs win against the Browns. That's what he said. He goes, come on. I mean, this offense has never been stopped for 4 quarters. And he's right. Nobody's ever done it. I mean, you've seen an NFL team like the Patriots in the AFC title game shut them out for a half. You know, you've seen the Chargers do a pretty good job for 3 quarters. You know, the Falcons probably did the best job of anybody that I can think of recently. And I think that was just Chiefs overlooking them.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be an intriguing matchup. It really is. But I think the Chiefs are going to win this football game. What does Danny Wolniak, KCTV5 sports director, think? She was our guest earlier this week to preview the matchup. And here's what she had to say about the Browns.
the Browns pretty much won their Super Bowl against the Steelers in the wild card round. They won their first playoff game in more than two decades. There is a lot of emotional strain and a lot of wear and tear on a team that has to go through something like that. And you come in very, very confident against the number one seed, like the Chiefs, who, as amazing as they look on film and look on TV, it is nothing compared to how good they are in person and those matchups that Andy Reid can create in the postseason. So I think that it's going to be very reflective of the Texans game from last season in that they are going to be emotionally drained coming in. Could they come out to a quick lead? I think that's very possible if the Chiefs are a little bit rusty coming off this these nice 2 weeks of rest and relaxation. But I definitely think the Chiefs come out and just dominate this one. I think it's a great matchup for them, and they want to get to Tampa. So I'm going to say that they end up taking this one by 2.5 touchdowns.
So Danny thinks they're going to win by 17. I think I could see that scenario. I'll say that the Chiefs, they don't cover the spread very often, but they did in the playoffs last year. I'll take the Chiefs to win by 10. I think it will be high scoring. 41-31 is my prediction. Danny said 41-24. I do think the Chiefs could fall behind early. I also do think that the offense could be really sharp in regards to Andy Reid coming off a bye. He's 23-3 in his career. He's 6-0 with Mahomes coming off byes, and they could just come out and just torch this Cleveland Browns defense. The Browns, if they keep playing the way they have been playing defensively throughout the year, they're going to get torched Sunday because they don't get a pass rush. They're not very good at pressuring the quarterback. Rimmers is healthier at right tackle. Fisher is better at left tackle now, healthier. They have not faced an offense anything close to this. They have not seen the speed of Tyreek Hill. And as Danny alluded to, and I thought it was a great point, she says you can watch it on film all you want, but it's different when you play the Chiefs on the field on game day. It just is. I mean, Kelce, and then if Watkins could go, that'd be great. But, Pringle, I think, can do things. Your Robinson makes a few catches. You got Le'Veon Bell. You still have to worry about respect coming out of the backfield to catch it. Darrell Williams has shown he can run the ball a little bit than they need to with some power football. As long as the Chiefs don't get too cute in this one, I think they're going to be fine offensively. And Mahomes, unless he just has a bad game, which have we seen Mahomes have a bad game in his career? Like he had a bad half against the Dolphins or a quarter. We really haven't seen him have a bad game in his career. I mean, he had a stretch where he struggled against the Rams on a Monday night in his first year.
First three quarters of the Super Bowl weren't great, to be honest.
That's true. That's true. That's a good point. Yeah, the Super Bowl, he was off in those three quarters. That's true. But then figured it out in
exactly.
Fourth. And he always seems to be able to flip the switch himself. And I think he's just chomping at the bit. I mean, the Chiefs, it's all about, this isn't about winning a Super Bowl. For the Chiefs, it's about a dynasty. It's about running it back. They want to be the Patriots. They want to dominate this league. And so in order to do that, here's your window. Before Mahomes' money, counts against your salary cap, this is a window. This is really almost a must. If you want to be a dynasty, this is kind of a must to win it all this year. And the Chiefs are in position to do all of that. Mm-hmm. They have home field advantage. How much that means, I don't know. With, 16,000 fans, it's at 80,000. The Browns are a favorable matchup. The Browns' secondary is not very good. I know Denzel Ward's coming back. They've got their slot corner maybe coming back. With those starters, they were 21st against the pass this year. Without them, they give up 500 yards to Ben Roethlisberger. They have given up 38 and 47 points to the Ravens this year. They've given up 34 and 30 to the Bengals. They got 35 to the Titans. I think the Titans would be the closest one, I would say, offensively to the Chiefs, and I don't think it's even that close. But in regards to Tannehill had receivers and weapons with A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. Of course, the Chiefs don't have Derrick Henry. And the Browns actually were way up in that game, and then the Titans rallied and made it somewhat close at the end. But they haven't seen anything like it. The Chiefs have seen defenses like the Browns.
This is not a
big deal. The Browns have not seen anything like the Chiefs present offensively. And the other thing, too, is that the Chiefs haven't seen a two-headed monster in regards to running game like Chubb or Hunt. But here's the thing. Only one of them can carry the ball at a time.
Yes.
And they're never both on the field at the same time unless they're going to try something like that in this game, which would be interesting. I just think the Chiefs have too much firepower. If the Browns were a team that could establish, and they've shown this year they've got a really good front four and get pressure, I'd be much more worried about this game. But I think Mahomes is going to elevate his game like he usually does. And as long as he stays healthy, the Chiefs are going to score, and they're going to score a lot. And even if this game, the Browns have TOP, time of possession, and the Browns have some long drives, and if the, even the Browns get up 10-0, the Chiefs are still going to get 7 or 8 possessions, and the Chiefs are going to score an average of, to me, at least 4 points of possession, because they're going to get touchdowns. And yeah, they might settle for a field goal too. And the number that we always throw out there is you got to be able to score 30 to beat the Chiefs. Usually you got to score 30 to beat the Chiefs. The Browns are capable of scoring 30. There's no doubt. Yeah. They're capable of scoring 30 on this Chiefs defense. The thing is, the Browns defense is not very good to where I think the Browns are going to score 40 to win. And I don't think they will.
I still go back to last week where they it was 28-0 after a quarter, and they still gave up 37 points to a Pittsburgh offense that is nowhere
that has been struggling.
Near what the Chiefs exactly. They've been struggling, and they're nowhere near what the Chiefs are. So
yeah.
They have got a lot to fix in a week if they think they're going to beat the Chiefs. And that's the thing that just keeps coming back to me. That's why what you said earlier, right, you feel really comfortable about the matchup, but then you're scared because of how comfortable you feel about it, right? And this was the matchup when the playoffs started, when the bracket came out, that I'm like, yeah, this is who I want to play right here. This is the Browns.
Be careful
of
what
all
you
the
wish
teams
for.
You can play, the Browns are the top of the list. Now, the Steelers would have been if we could have, but, I just go back to that Browns defense. You know, maybe Garrett's good and some of the other individuals, but as a collective group, they're not great.
No.
And I think the Chiefs can score a lot of points. Yeah, you pick 41-31. I'm gonna go 45
The world around you may seem
to 28 or something like that. I'm feeling really good about it. And like you say, there's probably gonna be a problem with that.
If they are limited in possessions, let's say they get 8 possessions, they get 4. Let's say they punt twice. 4 touchdowns and 2 field goals, that's 34.
Yeah.
I just don't, unless you know, the one thing I will say is that I think there are some teams now learning, get your hands up on defense if you can't get to Mahomes, and there've been some batted balls, more so the last second half of the season.
Yeah.
And we saw the Dolphins do a good job of that, and he had 3 picks in that first half, so a couple early on deflections on that one in particular, and they got a couple deflections. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. And Myles Garrett's a tall dude. So,
yeah.
You know, I got Claiborne who can rush the quarterback a little bit, but I think the Chiefs are going to be fine. I think they're going to win. So you and I both feel really good about it, which scares me even more.
Yeah.
As we go into the game on Sunday. I think that's just us Chiefs fans being worry warts, as I talked about earlier in the week when we freak out about no matter who the Chiefs are going to play, Chiefs fans are going to worry no matter what. But I do think this is the best matchup for the Chiefs of all the ones they could have had. Okay, so we both like the Chiefs. The playoff schedule, it is starting tomorrow. Rams at the Packers, 3:35 on Fox. Packers number one seed at 13-3. The Rams 10-6. Jared Goff will start with the broken thumb that he had surgery on, has pins in that thumb. All right, so who do we think is going to win in that one? What's the weather supposed to be in Green Bay?
It's supposed to be really, really cold. It might be supposed to be snowing, but I don't even know.
I'll take Packers.
I mean, I'm taking Packers because of the home field weather thing.
Aaron Donald has got a rib injury that he, you know, may, if he aggravates, he'll be out. He's going to give it a go. I like the Packers in this one. I just don't think the Rams offensively have enough. Like, I think the Packers are vulnerable. I really do. And Cam Akers could have a big day, the rookie out of Florida State. Packers aren't good against the run. I just don't think the Rams, you know, back a few years ago, you would have said the Rams had plenty of firepower. But they just, Jared Goff's not a guy I think is going to beat you with his arm. And if it's going to be snowy, then that means, you know, that might actually help the Rams. Who knows? But Devontae Adams, have you seen how he plays in the snow? He, like, runs around like there's no snow out there.
Yeah.
And other guys can't cover him. So it could be a big day, although Jalen Ramsey will be on Adams, I'm sure. Rams have the best defense in the league from what I've seen this year. The Packers have one of the best offenses, and they have probably the MVP. I'll take the Packers in this one, and yet I would not be surprised the Rams do win, but I just don't think they have enough in the tank. I'll go with Packers.
Packers.
All right. This game, to me, is the toughest one to pick. The Ravens at the Bills. It's 7:15 on NBC tomorrow night. Ravens 11-5, the Bills 13-3. The Bills got by the Colts, didn't play particularly well in that game. Colts made some boneheaded decisions. The coach made some interesting decisions. They missed a field goal. They missed out on a fourth down pass that was open. The Colts kind of handed the game to the Bills in a way. The Ravens played very well defensively. Offensively, they didn't really do a ton. I mean, Lamar, you know, had a big touchdown run. The Bills aren't great defensively. The Ravens are the better defensive team. You've got two explosive quarterbacks who can both run and throw, but Allen's the better passer. But it seems like, based off my recollection, and I know this has no impact on tomorrow's game, at least it shouldn't, but the last couple of times the Ravens and Bills have played, they've been physical games, very competitive, and I know the Bills are better this year than they've been the last couple of years, but the Ravens seem to be, at the end of the day, I come out of watching Ravens-Bills going, the Ravens were the more physical team. And so I'm going to pick the Ravens to win this game. Early in the week, I had the Bills. I'm going to take the Ravens to win this game. And I think we're going to have the AFC title game that we thought we should have had last year. It's just going to be a year later. And instead of Baltimore, it's going to be in Kansas City. I'm going to have Chiefs-Ravens. That's the AFC title game. In my prediction, the Ravens win at Buffalo. And I think Chiefs fans would be more than happy with that.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a major preference. The Bills seem to be playing better right now, so maybe I would prefer the Ravens in that aspect of what, you know, historically has happened with the Chiefs and Ravens.
Right.
I'm going to go with the Bills still.
Okay.
Still pick the Bills.
Last week you picked all the home teams. You went 2-4.
Yeah.
This week, Dusty starting out, two games, home teams. Yeah. All right, we'll see how that works this week. All right, he's picked actually three. He's three for three. All right, so let's go for the last one then. We know the Browns and Chiefs, 1 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake with the pregame, 2:05 on TV. It's on CBS with the kickoff from Arrowhead. 5:40 Sunday night, of course, is a marquee matchup between Tom Brady and the Buccaneers at the Saints and Drew Brees. This could very well be the last game for Drew Brees in his career. I don't think he's coming back next year. The Buccaneers have been beat by the Saints twice, and the Saints absolutely, well, first of all, they played the first game of the season. It was the first game of Tom Brady's career as a Buccaneer, and the Bucs were obviously rusty. They're, you know, not having all the preseason games you normally would have, and the Saints beat them pretty comfortably. And they got pressure on Tom Brady, and that's the key. If you get pressure on Tom Brady, you got a really good chance to win. Then they played on a Monday night in Tampa, and the Saints were up, what was it, 34-0 or something crazy like that. They're way up. They just kicked the you-know-what, living daylights out of the Buccaneers, which is interesting because the Buccaneers, if they win this game, would play the Packers, I think, and they kicked the living daylights out of the Packers in Tampa. So who knows? But anyway, the Bucs and the Saints, listen, I think it's hard to beat a team three times in a year, especially in pro football when the margin of error between these two teams is not that big. And it is Tom Brady. And the Saints have had this propensity to lose heartbreakers year in and year out. Something tells me that the Saints are going to lose a heartbreaker in this one again. And I so badly want the Saints to beat the Buccaneers. I truly do. I think the Saints are probably the better team, to be quite honest with you. They're at home, but it won't be the same home field advantage. But let's be honest, that hasn't helped the Saints the last couple of years either. There was the non-pass interference penalty that cost them against the Rams. There was the game they couldn't win against Minnesota at home last year. So being at home doesn't guarantee the Saints jack squat. I just don't think Tom Brady loses to a team three times in one season. I think Brady's going to be ready to go. I think the Bucs are much improved from the first two times they played the Saints. And so I say this with a little bit of anguish, but I think the Buccaneers are going to win. I really don't want them to. I'm tired of Tom Brady, just like people are going to be tired of Patrick Mahomes here in a few years, if not already, too. But Brady's got his 6 rings. He's been to 9 Super Bowls. Let's let Drew Brees get to the Super Bowl one last time. Well, I'm not actually going to cheer for that either because I have a case of pop with my buddy and I can't have that happen. So let's let Drew Brees knock out Tom Brady, win the old man battle at quarterback, and then Aaron Rodgers takes out Drew Brees and the Saints, and we got Rodgers and Mahomes, the State Farm Super Bowl. Which, by the way, if the Packers play the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, Rodgers versus Mahomes, State Farm shouldn't State Farm be the Super Bowl sponsor and have all the ads? Probably, when your two spokesmen are the stars of the game.
They're going to get enough publicity, whether they're the sponsor or not. Let's just put it that
right,
way.
Right, right.
Just having those two guys in the Super Bowl with all the jokes and the comments that are going to be made would be probably even worth more than the rest of it.
But think about this for a moment. If the Chiefs make the Super Bowl, and that's an if, because, you know, maybe they lose the Browns, and the Ravens come to Arrowhead and beat them. The Bills are a team that concerns Chiefs fans because they're playing really good football. No guarantees. But if the Chiefs, let's assume they make the Super Bowl, right? Let's play along. They would face either Drew Brees, Tom Brady, or Aaron Rodgers, unless the Rams ruin the party for everybody, or Jared Goff. Now, I mean, think about that. Mahomes versus Brady. Everybody loved that. Mahomes, and that'd be the last time probably Mahomes and Brady would face each other in regards to that. Obviously, in a Super Bowl, that would. And part of that worries me because I don't want Brady to get, you know, have the last laugh. And be but if I knew the Chiefs were going to win that game, I'm all for Bucks and Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But I'm just not convinced. And then. And I know the Chiefs beat them pretty easily early in the year. At least they had a big lead, and they let off the foot off the gas. The Bucs will totally adjust their defense the second time around. The Packers, you know, that, you know, I love Aaron Rodgers. I love Mahomes. I the Packers, I totally respect. The Packers and the Chiefs would be a great matchup, and that they're going to play again next year. It's on the schedule, I think, Packers and Chiefs. But, of course, we had Mahomes hurt last year to where there was no Rodgers versus Mahomes. So I'd love to see that. And then, and the one of the three that I'd least likely want to see would be Breeze and the Saints versus the Chiefs. And it's weird because before the season, I would have probably been all over that. But I've seen the Chiefs play the Saints already, and I saw Drew Breeze not play very well against the Chiefs. And I know it was his first game back. So I'm really – the game I would love to see is Packers, Chiefs, Mahomes versus Rodgers. Yeah. Because I guess if the Chiefs lose, I'm okay with that because Rodgers maybe last go. If the Chiefs lost to the Saints, maybe I'd be okay with that. Drew Breeze last go. But there's no way, and you know what, I want to see Tom Brady beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. No. So I'm really pulling hard for the Saints, but I think the Bucs are going to win. I don't think Tom Brady, if he's the GOAT, which I think most people agree he probably is, based on Super Bowl, if he is the GOAT, the reason the Bucs got him was for this type of game. And the Saints, maybe they'll finally get over the hump and break the curse of they've had the last few years. But the Saints offensively aren't playing great football. They did get Michael Thomas back. That'll help, but there's still that cohesion and chemistry with him and Breeze. Breeze doesn't throw the ball deep down the field anymore. I just don't think the Saints are going to beat the Bucs three times, so I'm taking Bucs over Saints.
So you went before I did because I was going to say the exact same thing, right? That two times they've already beat them, and I feel like the last time was obviously maybe a wake-up call for Tampa Bay. And
right.
They don't feel good about that. And how many times do you see that where a team gets blown? Well, I mean, you saw it wasn't the last time, but the time before that, the Browns were blown out by the Steelers this year.
Right.
And they can win the playoff game. And you see that enough times to understand that, you know, when you're playing against, like you said, what people probably regard as the greatest quarterback to ever play the game, and I just don't feel like he's going to lose three times to the same team in one season. So that's kind of my – it was the same rationale. You just talked before I did, so I feel kind of the same way. I think I picked the Saints earlier in the week to win it.
Yeah, I think you did.
I'm for some weird reason, I'm just changing my tune on this one.
So Dusty went home teams all six last week, first three, and then he goes for the road team, the Buccaneers, at the Saints. So you and I are picking the Bucs against the Packers in the NFC title game, and you're saying Bills Chiefs AFC title game. I'm saying Ravens Chiefs AFC title game.
Yeah.
Well, as long as the Chiefs are in it, I'm cool with all of that.
Yeah. It's funny you brought up the old quarterbacks in the NFC, right? Because I was talking about some of my friends and cousins is like the AFC has officially turned over the guard to the young guns, right?
All the best young guns are in the
Jackson,
AFC.
Mayfield, Mahomes, and then you look at the NFC; it's the complete opposite because that's just who their quarterbacks are, right? Well, except for Goff. I mean, obviously Goff's a little bit different.
Well, let's look at AFC real quickly. I mean, you've got Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes. Those are the first four just right off the top. Joe Burrow, I'll throw in there. I think he's going to, if he comes back for his ACL, all the best young quarterbacks are all in the AFC.
Yeah.
I mean, for crying out loud, Baker Mayfield is the oldest quarterback remaining in the AFC, and he's 25.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. And then the NFC, who's the great young quarterback? Like Kyler Murray? I mean,
He's the one right now.
That's the only one I can think of.
I mean, you know,
Daniel Jones, I don't think, is going to be a great player. Yeah. Who else are we trying to think about?
If Dak was healthy, he'd be toward the younger side of things.
Right.
Jalen
Carson
Hurts.
Carson Wentz, who, still not that
old. We don't
old.
Even know who it is, you know, for the Eagles.
Right.
But, yeah, it is. I mean, it's just interesting. You know,
Mitch Trubisky,
chance,
no. I don't
not
think
Trubisky,
so.
Trubisky, no. So there really isn't.
No.
Anybody other than Kyler Murray would be the top of that list, right?
I agree. Of
really young guys, because Russell Wilson,
he's not
Seattle,
young anymore.
You know, he's not young, and so it is. Teddy Bridgewater's not young. You know, you just kind of look at all the quarterbacks that are playing in the NFC.
Yeah,
and it's just the way it is. But it's interesting to really look at it and examine that.
No doubt.
You know, Phillip Rivers and Ryan Tannehill would have been really old compared to most of the AFC quarterbacks if they would have won last week.
No question. All right, there's a prediction of the divisional games. Once again, Chiefs and Browns, 1 o'clock pregame on Sunday on Z96.3 Lake and 2:05 kickoff. some organizations have hired new head coaches. The Jets are going to hire 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh as their new head coach. Urban Meyer is going to step out of retirement because he did look bored on the set of Fox. He's going to be NFL coach for the first time. He will take over for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And reports are that Arthur Smith, offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans, is going to be new head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. And once again, Eric Bieniemy has been passed over, at least for three of these jobs. First of all, I don't think Bieniemy won the Jets job anyway. Jacksonville job, I think, would have been intriguing. And then the Atlanta job, they took a guy that's not as good of an offensive coordinator as their head coach, but whatever. I just will point out, I'm not saying it's a racist thing. I just do want to point out that Arthur Smith is white. And the owner is Arthur Blank. So Arthur and Arthur. That's why they hired him. Eric Bieniemy, now there's four jobs that are open out there. What are the four? Detroit, I wouldn't want that job. The Chargers.
Yeah.
That looks like the best job now.
Yeah.
And who else? What are Houston. The other jobs? What are the other jobs?
Houston.
Houston. Yeah, that's a mess.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to go there.
What is the other one?
Forgot the other one.
Yeah. It's
yeah. So the Eagles.
Eagles.
The Eagles. The Eagles are open now because they fired. I don't think the enemy's gonna go. I don't think the Eagles are gonna go down the tree of Andy Reid again. And so I think you eliminate that one. I think Detroit, he doesn't want that job anyway. So to me it's Chargers or Houston for Bieniemy. And the Texans didn't want to interview him, so to me the Texans are out, which means that Chargers are about the only option for Eric Bieniemy, and something tells me they're not gonna hire another black coach after firing a black coach. And that shouldn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But I think as this plays out, Eric Bieniemy is going to be left in the musical chairs standing and not a chair to sit in as a head coach again. And it still makes you wonder what's going on.
Yeah, for sure.
Huh. Okay. Big 12 hoops this weekend. K-State supposed to play against Texas 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Good luck trying to find that on TV. Longhorn Network is where it's at. K-State 5-8, 1-4. Texas 10-2, 4-1. And are coming off that loss to Texas Tech. KU will be hosting Iowa State tomorrow, 12:30 pregame, 1 o'clock tip time there at Allen Fieldhouse. KU coming off that loss at Oklahoma State. Normally people would say this is a trap game, but when you just lost a game, it probably shouldn't be considered a trap game. Here is Bill Self on the Cyclones and getting ready for this contest.
It'll be tough, and it'll test our guys, you know, to get fired back up. And, you know, people can say it's a trap game. Well, it's not a trap game anymore because, you know, it's a game you have to have. But, you know, we got a lot of things to do to improve and get better. And so certainly I hope our mindset is a little bit better, not so much from a production standpoint, but from a pride standpoint and really locking in and trying to make other people play bad. We still haven't bought in to the thinking that, you know, we're not going to score enough points against teams that have good nights a lot of times unless we make them play poorly.
All right, so KU against Iowa State. Iowa State 2-7 overall, 0-5 in the Big 12. You'd expect KU to bounce back here. KU 10-3, 4-2 in conference play. The other Big 12 games, Baylor, number 2, at number 15, Texas Tech, 3 o'clock tomorrow. And Oklahoma at Oklahoma State at 7 o'clock tomorrow. And if you're a KU fan, you cheer for Tech to beat Baylor. Tech's already got two losses. Yes. You beat Baylor. Now suddenly KU, if they beat Iowa State, KU's only a game behind Baylor. And guess who KU plays on Monday night? Baylor in Waco.
Baylor.
So if Baylor would lose at Tech and then KU could knock off Baylor on Monday night in Waco, you would have a three-way tie for first or maybe second because Texas, they beat K-State, they would be atop the Big 12 in that scenario at 5-1, Texas hosting K-State as we established. All right, the last question before we close here on the sports ticket. Yesterday we talked about, and I talked about, how James Harden is a horrible example for young basketball players out there or young athletes, quitting on his organization, quitting on his team, forcing himself out, came into camp out of shape. All you got to do is look at the before and after. His pictures in the bubble, when he played in the bubble for Houston, and then what he looks like now. I mean, it's obvious he let himself go. And sometimes that happens. You're unhappy or depressed. And some people say, well, how can you be depressed? He's making $40 million. Hey, you can be rich and be depressed. So I'm not going to knock Harden on that. But he's not happy in Houston, even though they've been over backwards, gave him everything he wanted. And what happened was his biggest enabler, Daryl Morey, who was a GM, went to the Sixers. And there are reports now, a lot of people talked about how the Rockets didn't get that marquee player in return for James Harden, and that guy many people thought was Ben Simmons. Well, it comes out today that the report is that the Houston Rockets owner was like, no way are we trading James Harden to team up with Daryl Morey in Philadelphia with the Sixers. There's just no, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
No matter what, it's off the table. So Houston got a lot of draft picks, got Victor Oladipo from the Pacers, so forth and so on. And they did win yesterday, their first game without Harden. When he, and
you didn't have to tell me that.
I knew they would because there's no distractions. They don't got a guy throwing themselves under the bus publicly. So the Rockets would probably be better off moving on from James Harden because he obviously didn't want to be there. You know, Zach Greinke with the Royals, remember, he didn't want to be at the Royals anymore. And he was a great talent, but yet you knew you had to just get rid of him. Because you liked Zach Greinke, but you knew he didn't want to be there. He had gone through the losing for so long. And then he got traded, and that started the whole, you know, getting Escobar and Kane from Milwaukee allowed the Royals to turn things around. And those two ended up being ALCS MVPs, for crying out loud, a center fielder, a shortstop. That worked out well for the Royals, right? That was kind of, that set things in motion to turn things around to be a team that could compete for World Series championships in 14 and 15. The difference, though, is that James Harden and the Rockets have been good for a while, and a big part of that is Harden, certainly, and they've been to the Western Conference Finals before, whereas Zach Greinke, he didn't sniff any kind of success as a team at the Royals. So I understood why Greinke wanted out, but he didn't come into camp out of shape. He didn't throw his teammates under the bus, and he got traded, and it worked out for both sides, I think. James Harden is now a member of the Brooklyn Nets, if you didn't know. There are reports now that Kyrie Irving is not happy that, one, Harden was acquired, but also he's not happy in general because he didn't want Steve Nash as his coach. Here's the problem with trying to believe things that are thrown in the media, because I remember when Steve Nash was hired, there was a report on ESPN saying that Kyrie Irving and Durant weren't asked about Steve Nash, that they hired Steve Nash because that's they thought was the right guy. And then Tim Legler, I thought it was Tim Legler the other night, said after the Harden trade went down, that, you know, Kyrie can get with Steve Nash because that's someone who he wanted in as a head coach. And I'm like, what? I thought he didn't want him. Now reports yesterday say that Irving is still upset that he had no input on who the next head coach would be and he didn't want Steve Nash. So which one is it? ESPN's got multiple reports conflicting themselves. So I don't know what to believe. But I will say this, and this is one thing I'm tired of in sports. I'm tired of athletes thinking they're the general manager and owner. You're not. You're an employee. You're being paid a lot of money. So James Harden, you're being paid $40 million. You turned down $50 million. You're upset because you didn't get the guy you wanted to come into Houston to be your head coach, or you're not happy that your best friend who allowed you to be late for practices and film sessions and go party it up right after a game, you're upset because your enabler left and went to Philadelphia. And now, guess what? They're gonna hold you to a different standard because, one, you're the best player still on the team, and, oh, yeah, two, there's a new head coach, and he's going to have a different set of rules, and he has rules that he, you know, probably wants to not have broken. And James Harden says, I don't want to do that, so I'm going to whine and act like a big baby, and I'm going to get my way out. And he got his way out. And so, but you're making $40 million. Don't you, as an employee making that much money, and really, honestly, if you're an employee of any company, if you're paid, you know, decently, don't you kind of owe it to the company to, you know, do your best? That's not what James Harden did.
No.
He ate his way and played his way on purpose out of, and talked his way out of Houston. He goes to the Nets, and all this talk about Irving and Harden and Durant, the Nets are the favorite in the East, and they're going to play LeBron and AD in the finals. And I'm sitting here going, why are you guys are missing the whole point of the picture. There's not even any point to talk about that scenario until Irving comes back and plays. Irving is on personal leave, and now there are reports he may sit out the whole season. He's so upset. Kyrie Irving's only 28 years old. Here's what the Nets have on their team. They have Kevin Durant, who I think is a gamer and a baller who's going to play whenever he can when he's healthy. He proved that when he was on a bad Achilles and risked his ending his career by playing for the Warriors to try to win a championship. So Durant's not the problem. And this is his team anyway. The problem lies with Kyrie Irving wanted to be the man. He left Cleveland. He wanted to be the man. If he just stuck with LeBron, he'd probably have another ring in Cleveland. Instead, he went to Boston and wanted to be the man. In Boston, he wasn't the man. He was a malcontent. He was a cancer. And they were better in the playoffs when he didn't play when he was hurt. They actually did better, the Celtics did, without Kyrie Irving on the floor. He didn't get his teammates engaged. He hogged the ball, some people would say, shot it too much. And he's capable. He's one of the most electrifying point guards I've ever seen. I mean, he's amazing. The ball handling, the way he can score inside, outside, he is a tremendous talent, don't get me wrong. And I do think Kyrie Irving is a guy that does have his heart in the right place in regards to there are bigger things in life than basketball. And I try to tell people this. I'm a big sports fan, but there are bigger things, especially now with COVID-19 happening in 2020. There's bigger things in life than sports. I've learned that over the last year to where I'm not as wild about sports as I once was, although I still really care about it. But I'm not, you know, stuck on it as much as I was in the past. I think maybe that's part of maturing. Even though I'm 45, you can mature at any age. And understanding the situation that we live in. Kyrie Irving, I think, understands that. I'm 28, and if I've saved my money, I'm good. A lot of people say he's got 33 million reasons why he should come back and play for the Nets, even if he's unhappy. That's true. That's true. But at the same time, if you already got a whole bunch of money and you're saved up, maybe Kyrie Irving isn't worried about the $33 million. And he's more worried about social injustice and the things that are happening. We don't know what is accurate information out there in the media, but I can tell you this, and this is what we do know that's accurate. Kyrie Irving is not on the team right now. Kyrie Irving is not playing right now. And so when the Nets go trade for James Harden, you know what my first reaction was? They think Irving's not going to be back.
Yeah.
They needed a second superstar. They got Harden. And then they're like, Irving's going to have to deal with it if he comes back. I think that's what the Nets did.
Yeah.
They knew, listen, we brought in Durant. He's playing great. And Irving and him aren't getting along, according to one report. So we got a chance to get Harden. We'll get him. And then we'll deal with Irving's situation when he wants to come back, if he wants to come back. But if he doesn't, we're fine. We have Harden and Durant. We have a chance to go to the NBA Finals even without Kyrie Irving. But here's the thing. Kyrie Irving went to the Celtics, wanted to be the man. He went to the Nets, and he was recruiting Durant, him and Durant, to get together and play on a team together when he couldn't get along with LeBron, which I find interesting. You want to be the man in Boston. Now you want to have a sidekick, but yet you're mad when you were a sidekick to LeBron. Yeah. Who do you think's the bigger star, KD or Irving? That's easy. It's KD.
Yeah.
So I never understood that in the first place. I always immediately thought this is just going to be, you know, explosive. Now you add in Harden in the equation. So now you got two guys that want to be the guy. You got huge, gigantic egos. You've got a guy that played himself out of Boston, forced himself out of Boston. They kicked him out of Boston. And now he went to the Nets. You forced a trade to get out of Cleveland because you didn't want to be a sidekick to LeBron. And you wanted to carry a team. And now you go to a Nets, and now you're going to be the third wheel. And Harden wants to be the man, wants the ball in his hands all the time, and he wants to win. Supposedly he wants to win a championship because he's never sniffed the championship, whereas Irving has won one with LeBron, of course. KD, of course, has won multiple rings with the Warriors. And so Irving now is unhappy. Harden was making $40 million. He was unhappy. Harden wanted say as to who was going to be the next head coach of the Rockets on personnel, and he helped get Chris Paul out of town. He helped bring in Russell Westbrook, and they redid everything really to appease him. And it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then he gets mad and doesn't take $50 million extensions, which means that he's got plenty of money, and he goes to Brooklyn. Kyrie Irving's mad because he didn't have input or didn't like that he didn't have input and didn't want Steve Nash as his coach, according to reports. James Harden and Kyrie Irving seem to be somewhat similar from the standpoint that they think they should be able to say how to run an organization. I'm going to tell you something. You can be a great player, and I know that in the pros, you cater to some of these great stars. I get it. But when you let the inmates run the asylum, you have problems. And you have to respect who's above you. And if Kyrie Irving doesn't respect Steve Nash, then there's major problems in Brooklyn. If Kyrie Irving doesn't, his heart and soul isn't into basketball, then just retire. I agree with Stephen A. Smith. Just retire. And he can always come back, you know, out of retirement next year. Just call it good. Call it good for the year, which he might do. A lot of people are like, oh, you're crazy. Kyrie Irving's coming back. I'm like, listen, I've watched Kyrie Irving be interviewed. He's a different cat. I would not be shocked if Kyrie Irving sits out the rest of the year at all. Remember everybody talking about Le'Veon Bell? Oh, the guy's not crazy enough to sit out a year. Nobody does that. And I remember going, he's a different cat.
Yeah.
And he did. And I don't think it helped him. But he did. I think Irving could easily do it because basketball isn't his number one love. It's what he's really great at, but he has other interests. James Harden, basketball is, I think, his number one love, but he loves it so much he quit on his teammates and organization and gained too much weight. He better get in shape because in Brooklyn, he don't got much of a bench to come and give him a breather because they traded everybody away.
Yeah.
So should the Lakers be concerned? Back to the original question. Should the Lakers be concerned about the Nets getting Harden?
I wouldn't be if I
was. I'm not. I wouldn't be concerned.
I wouldn't be any team that was toward the top. I wouldn't really.
Are you the Bucks?
I don't even
concerned?
Know if I'm the Bucks and Heat and the best teams in the Eastern Conference. If I'm concerned, about
I don't think I would
Harden
be
going to the Nets.
I think this is overblown by ESPN and all these talking heads talking about how unbelievable it'll be because they've never seen this type of talent on one team in their primes. Irving at 28, Harden at 31, Durant, and those are three of the best scorers in NBA history, quite honestly, at their positions, all on one team, and it's like. Yeah, we've never seen that before. And you know what I want to say? There's a reason. There's a reason.
Yeah.
Because when you had LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, first of all, Wade and James, LeBron, were really good friends. And Bosch was okay sliding out of the limelight. And Wade was okay letting LeBron be the man, even though Wade was already in Miami. That's why that worked. Why did Boston work when they brought in KG and Ray Allen? It was Paul Pierce's team. Kevin Garnett respected that. Ray Allen respected that. But Kevin Garnett was a post player. Paul Pierce was really the small forward. And Ray Allen was a shooting guard. James Harden is a point guard. Kevin Durant is a point forward. Kyrie Irving is a point guard. They all have to have the ball in their hands all the time. Ray Allen didn't have to have the ball in his hands. Kevin Garnett didn't have to have the ball in his hands because he could control a game defensively at times and rebound. Yeah. Those guys worked. Those threesomes worked. You know why? Because they understood one another. Why the better comparison would be recently. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson. Why did that work? Klay Thompson never has to have the ball in his hands. He just needs to catch it and shoot. That's the only time he needs the ball in his hands. He's a really good defender. He doesn't need to dribble the ball much at all. Steph Curry, he usually needs the ball in his hands, but Curry's good moving without the ball to get open.
Yeah.
And then Durant's the post guy for the Warriors championships, and he can step out and shoot it. And so everybody worked together because they knew the common goal was to win a championship. And Curry, honestly, set aside his ego. Klay Thompson already was an unselfish player. Mm-hmm. Curry set aside his ego. Instead of averaging 30 a game and being an MVP candidate, he averaged 25 a game. And guess what? It worked for the Warriors, didn't it? Because in order to put together stars, three stars like this, you have to be able to respect who's the top dog, and you have to be able to have somebody within those three to step aside. And, you know, he's going to have good games, but you know that the game on the line, KD's getting a shot. The game's on the line, Paul Pierce is getting a shot. The Lakers don't have that threesome, but they have LeBron and AD. Why does that work? AD is a center, plays a different position, and he can control games defensively. Doesn't have to have the ball in his hands all the time. LeBron is a very great facilitator, and he's very unselfish. He doesn't have to score 30 every night, and LeBron makes his teammates better around him. What do these three guys in Brooklyn together have versus any of those other threesomes or trios I just told you to be successful? There's a reason you don't just put together three guys and all they do is hold the ball and shoot and are isolation guys. The Celtics didn't have three isolation guys. The Warriors didn't have three isolation guys. The Lakers with AD and LeBron, they're not too, I mean, they isolate, but they're not isolating all the time. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, for this to work, two of them are going to have to move without the ball.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, and you skipped the best big three ever, right? They didn't have to. They were all right in the same organization right at the same time. Tony Parker, Monte Ginobili, Tim Duncan. Why did it work?
Yeah.
Ginobili, you talk about sacrifice, right? Ginobili sacrificed a starting spot.
Absolutely. Come off
so
the bench.
So he could come off the bench and they wouldn't lose their flow.
Right.
They wouldn't lose their rotation.
And everybody knew Duncan was the man.
And he sacrificed some numbers in the NBA. I'm going to tell you that right now. Ginobili did.
Sure.
I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, and everybody's like, how? He only averaged like 14 points a game because he's a great, one of the greatest ever universal players of all of the whole sport.
But let me stop you for just a quick moment. Ginobili was also an all-around complete player, good defender.
Exactly.
As was Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
With the Brooklyn Nets, Kevin Durant is the only one of those three that's an all-around player.
Yeah.
Harden takes time off defensively. Irving is not a defensive, not that good defensively.
Yeah. And Tony Parker had to work at it.
Yeah.
But he got better as he went defensively. But the reason it works is the same reason we're talking about here, is because you've got different guys that are sacrificing different parts
for a common goal.
And knowing that the common goal is to win a championship, and those guys won four of them together, right?
Right.
Tim Duncan won five.
Right.
And how do you have two guys like Tim Duncan and David Robinson that basically play the same position?
Win a championship.
Can win a championship because they understand that they have to feed off of each other.
Exactly.
They understand that this is a team sport. And if you're going to win a team championship, you got to play as a team.
You got to put your ego aside and be a little bit unselfish.
It does. It all works. And like I said, that wasn't a situation where we brought guys in to create a super team.
Right.
Or whatever happened. That,
you drafted
that was all drafted,
guys.
Right. And
that's why
that's
why I didn't bring up that trio.
Exactly. Yeah. But what I'm doing is bringing up a trio that understands sacrifice, right? And understands how you can do it with three superstars on the team. Because there was a lot of talk early in Tim Duncan's career that he might go to Orlando, he might leave and go somewhere else, you know, but he stayed and they created something that was bigger than anything they probably ever could have dreamed of down there.
No doubt.
And so it is, no matter who those three are, no matter how you get them, stars have to make sacrifices if you want to win championships.
Right.
And, you know, it just is. That's just the way it is. And you cannot create a team. You can't go out and create a team and get two guys like Harden and Irving to put on the same team that need the ball in their hands, that are both point guards, that don't understand a lot about sacrifice.
I remember the Lakers had Shaquille and Kobe, brought in Karl Malone, Gary Payton, but those two were on the backside of the career, so I don't really count that.
They were definitely ring chasing.
Yes, they were absolutely.
It
they
didn't
were.
Work out for them.
They did chase, and they didn't win. And then there was another one, and it just slipped my mind. I had on the tip of my tongue that there was another situation where you had, Barkley, when he tagged on to the Rockets.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, Drexler and Olajuwon could win a championship together, but when Barkley joined the fray, it didn't work. So, yeah, and then, you know, there's a situation where, you know, those guys all need the ball in their hands to be successful. And when you have three guys, it's too many.
Yeah.
Three's a crowd, as they say. And I think Brooklyn's just got a mess on their hands. I really, truly believe that they've already known Irving's checked out, and that's why they got Harden. Everybody's missing the boat, I think, nationally. They think the reason they got Harden is so they could have three guys to take down the Lakers. I think they knew that Irving is a problem, and we've already invested all this, and we can't waste a year with Durant, who, of course, is, you know, coming off a what could have been a career-ending injury. We've got to maximize whatever we can with Kevin Durant playing right now, because Kevin Durant's not 25 anymore, and we got a chance to get Harden. And we got basically a two-year window, because these three guys are all, I think they can opt out at the end of 22 at the same time, Irving, Harden, and Durant. So you're rolling the dice for a two-year window.
Yeah.
If you think Irving's not going to play, or you think you're better off without Irving with Durant anyway, you got to get somebody else to help Durant, though, and you can go get Harden, and Durant signs off on it, which I'm sure they talked to him about that, and they play together in OKC. I think the bigger reason why the Nets got Harden was not to make it this big trio. I think it was to replace Irving, because Irving's, they don't feel comfortable he's going to be back.
Yeah.
And if he is, they feel he's going to be a problem. And they can say, you know what, Kyrie, stay away. We'd rather have Harden instead of you with Durant. Talking about that nationally at all.
No, and we said it right when James Harden was basically talking like he wanted to be traded to go play with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, which was like 2.5 months ago.
Oh, yeah, he said that right.
And so we said that right away. Like, that's going to implode. It's going to blow up. And in some way, maybe it has already.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
With Kyrie not even wanting to be a part of that. Did they even talk about that? Did James Harden say that?
And I think he's probably upset because nobody came to him asking his opinion on acquiring James Harden. And once again, I'll say this again. You're an employee. You shouldn't have any say over who the team trades for. Your job is to make it work. If you're a great player and a superstar, your job is to make it work. That's why James Harden, it was your job to make it work in Houston. All right? It was your job to make it work in Houston. Things change in upper management. Happens all the time with other organizations. Somehow, you know, look at LeBron. You know, I'm sorry. LeBron was in Cleveland. He went to Miami, back to Cleveland with a different administration, but the same owner, after there was bad rift there. Guess what? LeBron was big enough to get through it, went back to Cleveland. Then he went to L.A. and won a championship. Think about all the coaching, different GMs he's dealt with, and all the trades. And, yeah, he's had some input, don't get me wrong, in regards to personnel. And he might have input as to who the next head coach is. I get that, too. But the point is, LeBron, whoever ends up being the coach or the GM or whoever he gets on his team, that he makes them better and they win championships wherever he goes. And I know LeBron may be the greatest of all time. Kevin Durant, you know, made OKC better. They went from a team that won 20-some games to winning 50, 60 games and were up 3-1 on the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals and then decided to go join the Warriors and then won titles there. The great players may have input, no doubt, and you probably should ask for their input. But for players to be all mad and decide to quit on their team or to force their way out of an organization because they don't have the input or control that they want, then you tell, you know what, if I was running an organization, here's what I think I would do. I'd be like, you know what, give me half your salary and I'll give you a little more input. You want these guys to join this team? Okay, I'm not going to blow it on three guys. I need a bench to help you guys. So if you're all about winning a championship and you're telling me how to do my job, because James, I don't tell you how to play basketball, okay? I don't tell you how to practice. I believe and trust in you to do that on your own. Then this is my job. This is what I get paid for as a general manager of the Rockets. I'm the new guy. I'm the new GM. I know your good buddy, your best pal, your best buddy, your best whatever enabler left. This is I'm a new sheriff in town, but we can get along, all right? I will talk to you about certain things, but I am not going to need your okay and approval to acquire someone, okay? I don't need your approval to go get John Wall and trade Russell Westbrook. I'm going to put the best team together because that's my job. Your job is to play the best you can and make your teammates better because you're a superstar, or so you say you are. And if you're going to get all riled up about this team isn't good enough, well, guess what? You're getting paid $40 million. Perhaps that's why I can't put together a good team around you because you make too much money, which the previous regime gave you, and I understand that, okay? So let's work together for the common goal of winning a championship. And James Harden wants to say, well, I'm out of here. I'd say, don't let the door hit you on the butt on the way out. Because these athletes, and this is the way sports is going nowadays, and it's okay for athletes to have power, don't get me wrong, but when you start letting athletes tell you how to run the front office, you got problems. Houston's Absolutely. Better off without James Harden. The Boston Celtics are better off without Kyrie Irving. That's a fact.
Yeah.
That's a fact. You don't need that cancer. And now Brooklyn's acquired two forms of cancer. And that's not good. No. In real life, in regards to actual cancer, and acquiring cancers on your team. And you're paying $73 million to add cancer. Makes complete sense. Poor Kevin Durant.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be.
They've got $100 million tied up in those three players.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So you put all your eggs in three. Last I knew, you have to have five guys play on the floor one time, and you need some bench guys. The Nets have no rim protector. They trade away their best defensive player inside Jared Allen. I mean, and Durant and Harden and Irving aren't exactly the greatest defenders in the world. Durant can be when he wants to. So they're just going to outscore everybody? Well, good luck when you go up against AD and LeBron and Dennis Schroeder and guys that can shoot threes. And Alex Caruso, I know you may say, well, he's not a great player. He's a role player. He knows his role and does it. The Lakers are the better team still, even if Irving comes back and is happy. I still think Irving, Harden, and Durant doesn't work if they're happy. And the thing is, I don't think anybody thinks they're all going to be happy. So if they're not all happy, how's that going to work?
Not well.
Explosion. That's what's going to happen on Sunday. The Chiefs' offense is going to explode and put up 50 on the Browns.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.